We're studying in the 26th chapter of 1 Samuel, and last time we'd gotten down to the 20th verse. The setting for this passage is that David has just gone into the camp of Saul, where Saul was asleep and all of his men were asleep. They'd fallen into a deep sleep put upon them by the Lord, and he had taken the spear and the water container from by the side of Saul's pillow. And then he walked across a little valley to a hill on the other side, and he called back to the camp of Saul, and he begins to talk to Abner, the captain of Saul's army, and he chides Abner. He tells him how that he's let down on his responsibility to the king, that he'd allowed the king's life to be put into jeopardy, and he was worthy to be put to death because of it. Then he talks to Saul, and Saul calls him my son, and then he reasons with Saul, and he says, why do you pursue after me? What have I done? What evil is in my hand? Showing Saul that he certainly meant him no harm, that he'd done nothing wrong. And he asked Saul to listen to me. Here, I pray the words of your servant. Listen to what I have to say. Then he says, if the Lord has stirred thee up against me, if it's God that's told you to come get me because of something wrong that I've done, then let's give him an offering. Let me offer something to God to appease God. But if it be men, if the children of men have sent you out after me, then cursed be they before the Lord. These people should be cursed. These people have no right to do this. For they have driven me out this day from abiding in the inheritance of the Lord, saying, go, serve other gods. They refused to let me stay in my home country. They said that I'm not worthy to be in the inheritance of the Lord, in the land of Israel, in the Holy Land. And in effect, they're telling me to go serve other gods. And as we mentioned in the previous lesson, David could have found more comfort, more ease, more peace. As a matter of fact, his life would have not been in jeopardy had he gone and lived among the heathen. So God's people were putting him in great jeopardy. God's people were trying to destroy him, trying to kill him. And so this would be an incentive to say, well, I'm going to leave this country. I'm going to leave this people, and I'm going to go serve other gods. I'm going to live among people that will do this to me. And so we can see that in the church today, when we mistreat a brother, we are in effect trying to run him off from the church. We're in effect telling him, you'd be better off to go live among those that are not members of the church. Be better off to serve another God than the God we claim to serve, because we're going to mistreat you. And of course, we may find ourselves not serving the true God if we have an attitude like that toward a brother. So this is the reasoning power that David uses to Saul. He says, these people are in effect telling me to go serve other gods. So he says in verse 20, now therefore let not my blood fall to the earth before the face of the Lord. Don't do this thing. Don't bring about my harm or my death. Don't be guilty of putting me to death. For the king of Israel has come out to seek a flea. I am so harmless. I am so guiltless. I am so unworthy to have this done to me that it's as though you would come out to seek a flea. I'm not doing anything to harm you. I'm not retaliating in any way. Here I had you in my grasp. I could have put you to death. I have your spear in my hand to prove it. I have your water container that you had right by your pillow to show how close I was to you. You were fast asleep. You had no protection. And I was like a flea. I did you no harm. And he further says, as when one doth hunt a partridge in the mountains. Now, a partridge was a harmless bird. It was a bird that didn't attack or retaliate in any kind of way. And so if you go into the mountains to hunt a partridge, the best thing that a partridge could do for himself is to flee. If he was able to, he would fly away. He would not attack you. He wouldn't put any threat upon you. He wouldn't put you in danger in any kind of way. And so that's the same thing you've done. You've got this mighty army, 3,000 men, seeking my life, and I'm doing no one any harm. And so it's as though you'd come to hunt a partridge in the mountains. And it's a very undignified move for one so mighty, for one so high, for one so honorable as you to make. And so this is the way he reasons to Saul. And of course, if Saul has any kind of conscience at all about him, if he has any ability to have any reasoning done with him, this is going to make a very strong effect upon him, this appeal that David makes to him. And we see that this appeal that David makes does have quite an effect upon Saul. For he says in verse 21, I have sinned. Saul makes a confession. He acknowledges the fact that he's been wrong. I've sinned. And what he's having to say here is that he's done something against God. He's violated God's law. I have sinned. And he says, then return, my son David, for I will no more do thee harm, because my soul was precious in thine eyes this day. So he asked David to return. Come back. I'm not going to do you any more harm. I've changed. I have now decided that this is not the course of action to take. Of course, we know that David's heard this before. Saul has repented before. Saul has told David he's sorry before and asked David to come back before. And David has come back. And each time, Saul then doesn't stay with what he says he's going to do. He again has this hatred and enmity towards David, and he tries to kill him. But now it seems that Saul is once again truly trying to convince David that he feels like he's done wrong. And the reason that he gives here is because my soul was precious in thine eyes this day. That is, David, you could have put me to death. You had respect for my soul. You had some feeling for my life. And although I haven't held your soul to be that way, you held my soul to be that way. And so he says, behold, I have played the fool. Now, not only has he violated God's law and sinned against God, but he's also gone against his own personal best interest. I have played the fool. And then he says, I have erred exceedingly. I've not only sinned against myself, but also against you, David. I've done a very grievous wrong. So we see that regardless of how sincere Saul was, he's saying the right things. He's indicating the proper attitude here. When he says, I have sinned, behold, I have played the fool and have erred exceedingly. And many times whenever we do things that are wrong, things that we know that we shouldn't do, things that we've been maybe led into out of ignorance or out of carelessness, doesn't matter. When we get through, we can make the same statement Saul has made. I've sinned, I've played the fool, I've erred exceedingly. And the very best thing we can do is to acknowledge that and to repent of it and get God's forgiveness. And that's what Saul is doing here, in that he's acknowledging this. He is making it known to David that he now realizes, he now sees how wrong he's been. I have erred exceedingly. And David answered and said, behold, the king's spear. So in order to punctuate the point that he just made, in order to drive the thing home so that it can graphically be seen by all who are witnessing this, he holds up the king's spear. Behold the king's spear. This is further proof, further evidence of the fact that I could have put the king to death, that the king was at my mercy, that I was in a position in which he was very vulnerable. And so I now have his spear in my hand. It says, let one of the young men come over and fetch it. Now, as we know, David is standing across the valley on another mountain, and he's shouting across to Saul at a distance. And so he asked one of the men to come over and fetch it. You can have your spear back. Send somebody over to get it. This is proof, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that you were in my grasp, Saul, and I let you go. The Lord rendered every man his righteousness and his faithfulness. Now here David seems to turn the matter over to God. God is the righteous judge. God who will render to every man that which is duly his. So he says, the Lord rendered every man his righteousness and his faithfulness. If I've been righteous, if I've been faithful, if I've done the proper thing, then the Lord will repay me for doing that. But by the same token, this rule also goes the other way. Those who are not righteous, those who are not faithful, those who do the wrong things, God will also render to them according to their works. That's the rule. And so David seems to have this very thing in mind when he wrote Psalm 28, verse 4. There he says, give them according to their deeds, and according to the wickedness of their endeavors. Give them after the work of their hands, render to them their desert. And so we know that this is a rule of God. God does repay. He does repay according to our works. On the great judgment day, everyone's going to be repaid according to the deeds done in their bodies. So it's this righteousness and this faithfulness that God's going to be looking at. So as we complete the thought of David, the Lord rendered every man his righteousness and his faithfulness, for the Lord delivered thee into my hand today, but I would not stretch forth mine hand against the Lord's anointed. Because of my righteousness, because of my faithfulness, because of my adherence to the laws of God, God delivered thee into mine hand. God was allowing me the opportunity to show you that I could have had you if I'd wanted to. I could have put you to death. And so this was the providence of God that allowed me to be put in this position to teach you a lesson. Not that he wanted me to do you any harm, but I taught you a lesson today. I have brought you down. I have caused you to see your error. And he says, I would not stretch forth mine hand against the Lord's anointed. You're still the king. You've been put there because you were anointed by Samuel. You're the Lord's anointed. I'll do nothing against the Lord's anointed. And it was this anointing that you have of God, that's what saved you. And this implies also, by the same token, that David was also the Lord's anointed. He had been anointed to be king at a future time. And so Saul should have the same respect for him. If nothing else, he should have respect for the fact that he'd been anointed by God. And so this would mean that he should have more immunity from harm than the average person simply because he'd been anointed by the Lord. And David further says, And behold, as thy life was much set by this day in mine eyes, so let my life be much set by in the eyes of the Lord. Now he doesn't say that as thy life was much set by me, let my life be much set by thee. No, he says, as I had the great respect for your life, then I'm going to look to the Lord. Let my life be much set by in the eyes of the Lord. I can't expect you to give me protection. I can't expect you to honor my life. I'm not even asking that. I'm asking the Lord to do so. Let the Lord think as much of me as I thought of you. And if we turn that around, then we can say, let the Lord think as little of me as I thought of you. And so when we think ill toward our neighbor, toward our brother, maybe we're also inviting God to think the same way toward us. Should God think better of us than we think of our brother or of our neighbor? God expects us to get along with our fellow man. He expects us to have a state of peace to the very best of our ability with our fellow humans. And if we have nothing but bad to think of and to do for our fellow humans, then maybe God has nothing but that for us. So he says, As thy life was much set by this day in mine eyes, so let my life be much set by in the eyes of the Lord. I will look to the Lord for my protection. Just as I did to you, I'm expecting God to do to me. Now, if that had been bad, then of course David could have expected God to do bad to him. But since it wasn't bad, it was good, then David expects to have good from God. And so he says, And let him deliver me out of all tribulation. I'm not even asking you, Saul, to deliver me. I'm not asking you to look favorably upon me, because I have my God. The good things I did to you, I did so that I wouldn't have good things from God. Not expecting good in return from you, but expecting good from God. And so David's looking in the right direction for his blessings. He has the right idea here, because it really and truly is God that we can depend upon in the long run, and not necessarily our covenants or treaties with other persons. And so if we have God on our side, if we have God looking out for our life, if we have God thinking as much of our life as we think of somebody else's life, then we truly are going to be protected. Let him deliver me out of all tribulation. Well, David has made a very convincing speech to Saul. He has produced evidence that he's right and Saul's wrong. And so in verse 25, Then Saul said to David, Blessed be thou, my son David. Now, Saul really does see here that David is a person that has great ability, great qualities, and he is approved of in the sight of God. Blessed be thou, my son David. Thou shalt both do great things, and also shalt still prevail. He seems to be saying that you're eventually going to prevail. You're going to win out over me. Not that David's in any contest with Saul, but he's implying that eventually you're going to be king, and you're going to do great things. Here David had already demonstrated much of his greatness. He had outwitted the king, stood right by his very side while he was asleep, and taken his spear and his water container. He had publicly denounced Abner for not being able to protect the king. He had shown the king that he was wrong, shown the king that he meant him no harm, and caused the king to feel that he truly was in the wrong. And so Saul recognizes this. Thou shalt both do great things, and also thou shalt still prevail. Not only are you going to continue to do great things like you have in the past, but you're also going to prevail. You're going to be the king. So David went on his way, and Saul returned to his place. Even though Saul had apparently repented here, it did not impress David enough to cause David to go back to the area where Saul was. He didn't go back to the area of the king's court. David went his way, and Saul returned to his place. And we don't have any evidence that these two ever saw one another again. This is their last personal meeting, but it is a very dramatic occasion. This is a very interesting and dramatic section of the scriptures here as we see these two characters revealed. The character of Saul and the character of David. We can see some of Saul in each one of us, having the feelings that Saul had. We're all tempted with these feelings of anger and hatred and envy and jealousy. Although we may not actually take a spear and throw it at our adversary, we have the feeling in our mind that this may be what we'd like to do. Maybe it's a subconscious feeling. We have to fight these feelings and overcome them. And we'd all like to see also some of David in us, a person that is high and holy, a person that doesn't do any wrong, a person that is, when he is persecuted, it's because he hasn't done anything to deserve to be persecuted. And so the Bible portrays these characters very graphically, and it's a deep and very edifying study in human nature as we study these two characters of David and Saul and their interaction one with another. And it gives us a very gratifying feeling to know that the righteous actions of David, that the kindness that David showed towards Saul, actually overcame Saul, so that David here defeated a great enemy upon this occasion simply by doing good unto him. And these actions of David seem to follow hand in hand with the great principles laid down by the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 12, beginning with the 17th verse. Recompense to no man evil for evil. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. David sets a very good example here of overcoming evil with good. And so we close the 26th chapter of 1 Samuel.